Here, it's Between the Lines from Phoenix FM, where we concentrate not just on sport, but on stuff we can talk about on a Saturday afternoon, on for an extra hour, going on until 3 o'clock this afternoon, because Harriet's away, and it gives us time to get more people down in the studio. And Ben Simmons is in the studio at the moment. Ben, I'd be correct to describe you as a local comedian.
I guess that's right, yes. Afternoon, Steve. Hello.
Yeah, hello there. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much, yeah. Yeah, I've lived in the area for about 3.5 years now. I lived in Hutton for a while, now I live in Shenfield. But I work all over the country, primarily as one half of a double act, working with my dad, which a lot of people find a bit crazy. But we've worked together about 12, 13 years now. And my dad's worked as a comedian ever since the late 1960s, doing the kind of variety cabaret circuit. Mm. Did a lot of pantomimes and summer shows and things. And then with more people going on foreign holidays, as time's gone on, that kind of sort of seaside entertainment's almost died out a bit, if you like. But we still do a lot of pantos together, and we do shows wherever and whenever we can. But we've moved also into the production side, so we do a lot of writing and directing now as well. And I do that on my own as well as with my dad. And I did train as an actor to begin with, and then sort of got roped into working with my dad about 2004. And sort of haven't looked back, really. And it's all kind of a silly sense of humour, and not so much sort of telling gags and stuff, but a lot of visual things and routines, a little bit Tommy Cooper-esque, I guess, with sort of magic tricks going wrong and things like that. And it's quite a nice dynamic, because it's always my dad's the one messing about and being stupid, and I'm trying to keep him under control, getting more and more frustrated. But then when it comes to doing pantos and stuff, the good thing about that is naturally everyone's a little bit silly, so I don't have to be completely serious. I get a chance to muck around a bit as well. And I've always loved that kind of humour, that kind of in-your-face humour, a lot of visual stuff, colourful stuff. And the great thing about panto is kids enjoy it, and it's good for all the family.
Yeah, it's family entertainment then, isn't it? And I mean, I suppose you tell people you're a comedian, the first thing they'll do is tell me something funny. Yeah. You tell people you're an actor, the first thing they'll say is, oh, what have you been in? Is it anything I've seen?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just trying to get across, well, we're, you know, it's all different. You must, though, be seeking out your own work all the time. Essentially, you and your dad are your own agent, are you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, as time's gone on, certainly this side of the industry, it's kind of got harder and harder to get work. I mean,
yes.
And also, nowadays, the big stuff on TV, you kind of get Live at the Apollo and stand-up shows, and it tends to just be comedians, comedians, comedians all the time. There used to be, so I remember growing up in the 80s and 90s, and you had Live at the Palladium, which they're bringing back now, they've done a series of. And
what you think of as variety acts,
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Don't see, do you? Yeah.
You don't get shows now with sort of singers, musicians, jugglers.
Or a guy on a unicycle.
Yeah, exactly. I've tried it, yeah. And I was useless. I can barely do roller skating and skateboard, so I'd have no chance on a unicycle.
Yeah. But yeah, and juggling.
Yeah,
can you juggle?
Well, I can juggle with balls and clubs, but no more than three. It's not got more advanced than that. But I taught myself to juggle in the garden one summer when I was about 12, I think.
Can your dad juggle?
He can, not quite as well as me, but he tells everyone he taught me to. But I've surpassed him now, yeah.
So you're loving this. It's keeping you busy, is it, as well?
Oh, yeah. It's a really interesting profession, and obviously you don't have a lot of security, and that you, like you say, you're always kind of looking for work and thinking about what's going to happen in the future. There is a nice kind of thing in that we've worked for the same pantomime producing company for about 11 years now, and there's a sort of lot of loyalty with them, and so you do kind of feel like you've got a large chunk of work coming up at the end of the year, but then you can't rely on that, and obviously you need to be doing other stuff. But it is very varied. You're constantly meeting and working with different people. And you have there's a nice thing of certainly directing and writing as well. You have more interaction with the kind of famous names in the cast and stuff.
Yes.
And like this year, for example, we're going to be at the Pomegranate Theatre in Chesterfield, which is quite a heck of a long way away. So we
up in Derbyshire, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually, it's the tip of Derbyshire as
So we have to stay away while we're up there over Christmas and everything, but our families can come up. But we've got Liz McLarnon from Atomic Kitten,
right,
who's in it, and a guy called Lee Brennan, who was in the boy band 911 in the 90s. So there's going to be a lot of singing and 90s references, I think, as well. But they came back a bit with that big reunion show that was on TV as well, and they did a few more tours and stuff, so they got a bit more notoriety again.
And they've still got a fan base, so they'll bring people along with them as well. So
But it's great. I mean, over the years, I've worked with Gary Wilmot, the comic. We worked with Neil Morrissey.
Gary Wilmot's fairly local, isn't he?
I think he's from Rosie. Neil Morrissey was a great guy as well, very funny. And then I worked with Lisa Scott Lee from Steps, who I grew up at university sort of cheesily loving Steps and having my mates sort of laugh at me about it, but actually getting to work with her was great as well. So that's nice. And then also I've written pantos for other people that you don't actually end up meeting, but it's nice knowing they're delivering your lines and scripts that you've written as well.
We'll talk about that fairly shortly. Cool. Give you time to catch your breath as well. But no, look, thanks very much for coming down and seeing us. We're chatting to Ben. See, this is what goes on. If you're not seeing people on TV, they could well still be busy out there working, and there's still a bit of a scene going on there.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Okay, well, look, thanks for that. Aaron's going to update us. I'm sure you'll forgive Aaron if he gives us a little wave if there's news of a goal or anything as well, Ben. But you are a bit of a sports fan as well, aren't you?
I am. For my sins, I support Liverpool in the Premier League, which was great when I started. When I was growing up, I was a glory hunter in the 80s and they won everything. So then it was fantastic. And then 90s and noughties sort of went a bit downhill, not quite the same.
You've had your moments, though. There must be a famous night in Istanbul where
Fantastic.
So it's worth it for those sort of things.
A friend of mine lives in Australia and he was watching, and when we went 3-0 down that night, he texted me and said, "I'm going to bed. I'm fed up."
I was in Mallorca at the time and we didn't see the first half, and of course then you think, "Oh, I've got to watch the second half."
Yeah, it was mad.
I was
texting this guy, "Get up, you've got to get up, it's 3-2. Oh my God, it's 3-0, you've got to get up."
What time would it be in Australia then, though?
Yeah, it was the middle of the night. He was watching it, so he had more of an excuse.
The fans are very committed out there. There's a lot of Premier League fans that just stay up to watch their match.
Definitely.
Don't give it to them other side of the world, but they still stay up. So
do you get to see Liverpool at all play? I mean, if you're travelling around, do you think, oh, I'll try and watch a match?
It's quite doing the sort of nature of the work I do, and then also when you're not performing these days, you have to have lots of other things you're doing in between. Quite a lot of the time I'm working at weekends, but I have been to Anfield a few times, and then away games here at Palace and Wimbledon a few years ago, and Villa. I went to an away game when we were in the Worthington Cup, as it was, about 12 years ago, I think. So I haven't seen them live for a while, but most of the games every weekend I'm always finding ways to watch.
The Liverpool matches are usually on TV as well, aren't they?
I think TV companies like Liverpool for whatever reason. They've always had a massive fan base, and then obviously you do tend to get a lot of their games shown live as well. It helped having the European run last year as well, and regular sort of cup runs and stuff. We always see
playing
at
3 o'clock today away at Burnley.
I felt worried when the fixtures came out for this season. I thought it was quite a harsh start for Liverpool. Arsenal away, Burnley away, then we've got Tottenham away, and then Leicester.
Know,
I think
if you beat all the big teams first, then
exactly could be the greatest start ever.
I mean, Arsenal and Tottenham aren't the teams they were last season, it seems. So.
Yeah, sure. No, I think you could be right. Yeah. And certainly with Klopp, his first full season, as a Liverpool fan, I'm quite hopeful this year. Yeah. The start of last season, it was all a bit worrying.
Yeah, Brendan.
Yeah.
Now at Celtic, winning 3-1 today. So.
Yeah.
No, 3-0.
3-0, yeah. You've just given St Johnson a goal. It's 3-0
still.
I'm
sure they deserve
it. Yeah, may well be the case. All right, well, look, we'll talk more about the comedy side of things then. You were talking about writing pantomimes, etc., and we were just saying off air, I mean, if you write something, you then agree a price with an agency, do you, and they then own that work?
That's pretty much, yeah. I mean, the production company who we work for now, we've worked for this will be our 11th year with them, and we have a great relationship with them, but they ask you if you want to write a script, you quote a price you'd be happy to get for that, and it's basically a kind of total buyout, so they then own the rights to it once you've finished it, basically.
So there's almost like a Dutch auction, I suppose, where they're getting loads of scripts sent to them and they can decide what they want.
What happens is there are certain people who are known for doing it, and they might get people approach them and ask whether they need people for that year. And then also, every script gets tweaked every year, but a lot of them are kind of recycled to some extent in terms of the scenes that are actually happening, and obviously the famous storylines stay the same forever.
So that could be used for a school play or something then?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We've had people approach us and say, we're doing an amateur production, do you have any scripts or parts of scripts you could let us use? And obviously we're happy to do that kind of thing and sort of help people out as well, because it's quite tricky to get into that side of it. You know, people go to drama schools and become performers and train to become performers in that route. And then some people maybe don't have those opportunities, and it's nice to sort of help people and advise people who are looking to get into it in other ways, you know.
Yeah. And on top of that, you're keeping busy by writing the scripts. I suppose you're not necessarily getting paid while you're doing it, but you're working then. And
absolutely. I would say when I write with my dad, obviously we can't meet every single day in a chunk of day, so it takes probably sort of 8 to 10 weeks to write a pantomime, meeting up once or twice a week, you know. And you have the story, you have the scenes, but you have to, we kind of start from scratch and think about what famous people have been put in what roles, and then obviously the audience are going to want to see those people more. Usually they're being paid more, so they should be on the stage more. So you can have a script where, for example, we've written a Cinderella this year, and the fairy godmother is the most famous person in it. She's the lady who plays Winnie McGugan in Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Right.
Eilish O'Carroll. So the audience are going to want to see her doing a lot of stuff. And traditionally, the fairy godmother wouldn't always be the biggest part and might be not on very much. So you have to find reasons for her to come into other parts of the story.
Yeah.
And then equally, you might do an Aladdin where the Chinese policemen are a double act who are really famous, and suddenly they've got to be on more than other people, and the Aladdin and princess relationship maybe takes a bit more of a backward step, you know.
But there'd be no opportunity for you to consult with the actors and get any feedback, so...
Not really. I mean, sometimes the producers will say, oh, they want to do a particular thing they're known for, or they've got their own thing they'd like to bring to it, and you kind of liaise to some extent.
Right.
But basically what happens is we'll write a script to begin with, and then if it needs tweaking or whatever, we're prepared to do that and sort of adapt it a little bit afterwards.
It's really interesting.
Because, I mean, people think about panto, and it's a bit of a shame it gets looked almost down upon as an art form and something people do when they're on their way down.
So popular, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like I said earlier, with kids in theatre, for most children, it's the first time you see a live show, maybe at a very young age, and introduces them to that, and they may then end up going to the theatre throughout their whole lives if they have a great experience the first time, you know.
And actors, quite famous actors, would travel from America, Australia, and, with a point of view, just saying, I want to do panto.
Absolutely.
You know,
I know there was a lady in pantomime last year who was an American star who just did it because she wanted her family to see her in a pantomime, not even necessarily because she wanted to do it. She had sort of relatives over here and did it for that.
You know? And it's been tried. I mean, it's so British, isn't it? You know, you don't want to stereotype the nation, but it's been tried in other nations and it just doesn't seem to work. We've got such a tradition there.
No, that's it, absolutely.
Well, mind that microphone, it's all right, I'll bring that up a bit.
I'm damaging the studio. So. No, absolutely. It is a uniquely kind of British thing.
Yeah.
And it's always been, like you say, very popular and for the whole family and everyone's. And that's what I like about it. You do the silly stuff that appeals to kids, and you can have sort of slapstick, people falling over, and then you can have stuff that's aimed more at adults that's not going to be offensive and upset children, but you know it's going to go over their heads, and the adults like that as well. That there's different levels of humour all throughout it, you know. So.
Well, look, we've got so much more to talk about. We will talk, because I know that there will be people listening who think, how can I get into that? We'll talk plenty more about that. It's not just about appearing on one of Simon Cowell's programmes, is it?
No, certainly.
There's far more to it than that. Great stuff. Well, look, Ben's here. Ben Simmons talking comedy and much more. We'll have a song from Eels, and then we'll update you with the travel news and the events. And back then with Ben. All right, well, look, we've got Ben in the studio. We've been talking plenty about the scripts and the way that... You make it pay, do you? I mean, you can make a bit of a living from this,
I mean, we've worked for, like I said, the same producing company for quite a while now, and sort of over the 2 months I would say we were away doing a pantomime, it certainly keeps you going and can keep you going for a few months afterwards, because traditionally I've found when you finish sort of beginning of January, middle of January time, there's always a couple of months where work is a bit slower at that time of year. And so it helps that you've got a bit of a chunk that you... It always sees me through Christmas and January. But like Christmas and New Year, I'm okay.
It's a good time of year to get paid, isn't it?
It's never a bad time of year to get paid, I think. So that's... certainly.
Well, look, I mean, if anyone's listening and they think, great, you know, I mean, there are plenty of university courses that would steer them towards your line of work. And you watch TV, you'd think, oh, I've got to get on the Simon Cowell programme to do this. But if you look at any TV programme, there are lots of people behind the scenes. You've only got to look at the credits that roll up at the end of a film a TV programme.
There's so many media courses now, not necessarily if you want to be performers and get into acting and dancing and necessarily, but there's lots of media courses where you can get in behind the scenes and then get jobs with TV production companies as researchers and runners and start off just for a small production company making teas and coffees, running errands and things like that, and then gradually working your way up to more positions of responsibility. And I think there are a lot of people who've got into presenting programs starting off in that route as researchers and starting off behind the scenes. And also in terms of the kind of live performing and comedy, there's a lot of chances, like you mentioned earlier, with open mic nights and things like that, and people just preparing their own material and going and trying it out in pubs and clubs all over the country, seeing how well received it gets. And then to some extent, whatever you're doing, you need a bit of a break, you need someone to take a chance on you. But if you're talented, usually you can get to a certain level where you're happy, you know, and hope that something's going to come along the way. But also in terms of what I did when I was younger, I never really knew I wanted to focus on being a performer, and I always had quite a wide range of skills. So I went to university and did a degree in classics, in Latin and ancient Greek, which when you know what I've ended up doing, it's quite bizarre, and it's interesting. I see the odd bit of Latin or Greek now and recognise it and can translate the Greek alphabet and things, but really, I've never used it since I finished uni.
Does it help with your command of language, though?
Yeah, certainly. With a lot of modern languages, you can see it's rooted in Latin and stuff like that, and how it's developed. But I did that because I was maybe thinking about getting into journalism and getting some kind of an arts degree, and I knew that classics was something that could lead on to that. Mm. And then while I was doing my degree, I realised I wanted to get into acting and performing as a career. And so I then did a postgraduate course at a drama school in London, the Central School of Speech and Drama, which has since become the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. It wasn't royal when I was there. I didn't have that effect. And I just did a year there, sort of having singing lessons every week and acting classes. And then with a lot of drama schools, you get showcases at the end where they invite agents and casting directors and things to come and look at everybody. And hopefully people get taken on. Obviously, in terms of most performing, acting and whatever, you need an agent who's putting you up for auditions and things like that and working on your behalf. So that's a good way to go. Mm. And then also, again, I've always sort of forked off at tangents throughout my life. I finished drama school, and instead of then auditioning and trying to get a lot of straight acting work, I went and worked at a hotel, an entertainment hotel in Brighton, just along the coast in the town centre, and it used to be a Butlins hotel and then became something else, became taken over. And then I kind of got into that much more almost light entertainment variety side of it, doing a lot of singing, running karaoke, running events with people, and we had our own sort of professional production shows that we performed as well. And I'm eternally grateful that I did that because I met my wife there.
Right.
So she was a dancer in the shows as well, and we met each other about 15, 16 years ago now.
Wow.
Never look back.
Great. Well, look, I mean, there's so much that's going on. We will sort of wind up after the next song and talk a little bit more about how people not only can get involved, but they can follow you on Twitter, etc. And it just means that, I mean, I'm sure you help. I'm sure occasionally people will be asking you for advice as well.
Sure,
and you'll
sure,
be able
yeah.
To go from there. But I think the one question that I've got then is It's the whole job interview thing, isn't it? If someone had said to you 20 years' time, well, could you see yourself doing this and you've ended up where you are?
I would never have said that. I mean, I always kind of played it safe when I was younger, and that's it's interesting having a parent who's a performer as well and knows how tough it can be and how unreliable a profession it can be. And my mum and dad were always incredibly supportive. They never said, don't do that.
No, they knew. I didn't say get a proper job.
Obviously, my dad's been extremely supportive in that he said, come and be a part of the actor, let's work together.
Yeah.
So that's been great. But yeah, I've always wanted something to fall back on. And yet, I know I just love what I do and the variety of it, the silly nature of a lot of it, and as well with the sort of behind the scenes stuff, I like the extra responsibility now of like the whole look and feel of a show when you're directing it rests with you, really. You know?
You're more in control, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of years ago, we did a Christmas show in Worthing on the South Coast, and we were just in it. We didn't direct. And after you've directed for a while, it's kind of nice to sit back and just be a performer and not have all that responsibility. Yeah. But then, obviously, you don't get paid quite as much. So it is nice to do it all in one and enjoy all of it, you know.
Well, look, we'll talk some more. We've got Georgia Box coming up. And, we will talk more after Georgia Box as well. And anyone listening, we'll give out all the details. We'll put them up on the website later. And, Ben, thanks very much for coming down and seeing us, chatting to us.
It's a pleasure.
So interesting seeing another side of things. As I say, I mean, as a comedian, you're not really someone who does stand-up and such,
no,
are
no,
you?
I mean, my dad and I do have an act that we do outside of pantomimes and stuff, but it's more... it's not really what you would call stand-up. It's sort of, unfortunately, what people would think of as a little bit more old-fashioned, which I don't look upon like that. It's kind of just something that's not as popular at the moment, and you're hoping it kind of comes back round. I remember a few years ago, everyone was saying, oh, now Britain's Got Talents on and shows like that. That kind of variety side, almost light entertainment, what it used to be known as, ought to come back again. And I really kind of hope it does. I've always liked that kind of silly sense of humour and nothing offensive. I mean, you get a lot of stand-up comedians constantly swearing and stuff. And if you actually take the swearing out, the jokes are still funny and it's kind of not really necessary. I think these days it's clever to be funny without risking offending people, you know. And I understand sometimes for the shock value of it, it can enhance it a little bit in a totally different way, but... I've always found it more rewarding to know that you're not trying to do all that and can still make people laugh.
But then if they're on something like Britain's Got Talent, they've got to take all that out of their act
haven't they? And that's another thing with those kind of shows. People get known for doing something and they do it for a minute or maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of performers out there, like my dad and myself, and then musicians, like you say, jugglers, unicyclists, whatever, who've honed their skills over so many years and maybe only do a 5-10 minute bit in a little show. But most of the people on Britain's Got Talent couldn't do that. If you said to them, go on stage for 20 minutes, they'd be lost. They wouldn't be able to do it. You know, obviously, you can get known for being on there and then kind of build up an act. And then also what's happened a lot is established acts going on there, and kind of it's a bit of a risk because if they get laughed at and don't get through, then it's kind of damaging their reputation. But equally, like, there's been a few impressionists on it recently who've been sort of working professionals for years beforehand and just got a bit of extra notoriety by sort of risking it going on that and doing well, you know, getting through to the final. That ventriloquist guy who was on a few years ago, Steve Hewlett, he's a good friend of ours. And he had that Simon Cowell puppet and he had a Sunita puppet and was all messing about with those, caused a lot of hilarity. But he'd been around for quite a few years.
And the guy who won America's Got Talent, I mean, he was British, wasn't he? And,
yeah,
been around for years. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you can be working at a certain level and then take a risk, go on a show like that, and if you do well, it can...
really pay off.
But equally, if you don't do well, it can cost you, you know. So, yeah, it's interesting. Those kind of shows have sort of given it a platform again and that kind of... that type of entertainment.
People sit round the TV as a family and watch it
as well.
And it's all over Twitter. I mean, it's brought the modern day twist to it.
And I remember being a kid and there were still opportunity knocks. And like you mentioned earlier,
New Faces.
And, my dad and uncle were on Search for Star in the 80s. Wow. And it's kind of, Britain's Got Talent's an extension of a much more lavish production of those kind of shows, you know. Yeah. And it's great because... it's giving those people a chance and giving them the opportunity to be seen by people they wouldn't normally be seen by, you know. So good luck to anyone who goes on it, but I don't think I'd be willing to take that risk at the minute.
Well, look, if people want to find out what you're doing, you're all over social media then, as far as Twitter's concerned. If we want to know what you're doing from day to day,
personal Twitter account is at bensim21. And then we do have my dad and myself have our own Twitter account as well, which is SAS Keith and Ben, because we're Simmons and Simmons.
Yeah.
Took us ages to think up the name of our act. So at SAS Keith and Ben, or you can just search Simmons and Simmons on Twitter. And then we have our own website as well, which is simmonsandsimmons.org.uk. I have my own website, which is bensimmons.com. There's so many places you can find out about me online. It's a bit crazy, really.
Look, thanks for coming in. And I mean, if you're doing anything locally, we'll certainly give it a mention.
Oh, by
all means, talk about that.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see you down soon. You only live down the road anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll pop down next week. Cheers.
Great stuff. Thanks, Ben. And we'll definitely have you down. We'll have you in the studio soon as well. Cheers. If we don't beforehand, find out what you're doing all over Christmas as well. We can talk more. It might not be local, but if anyone's up in Derbyshire, they can go
Cheers.
And see you.
Thanks
a lot, Ben. Thank you.